All right, let's get started. Good afternoon. My name is Fai. So what I do in Microsoft is I focus completely on IoT. But IoT is huge. When we define IoT with our customers, typically it's a data ingestion project, or it could be an analytics project. But nevertheless, there are, when it comes to a technical perspective, there are specific pillars, if you will. And the way we look at things, there are three different pillars, which forms an IoT solution end-to-end. So the reason why I call my session Supercharge is because it's supercharged with demos. I won't be spending too much time on slides, but what I'll do is, for the benefit of everyone in this room, it's a really huge hall in here, is I'll show a couple of slides to kind of illustrate or explain the concepts behind what I'll be demonstrating, and then I'll jump straight into the demos. All right, So I hope you guys who are seated all the way to the back, I trust you have really good eyesight, but I'll try to use my zoom in to zoom in into, especially when I demonstrate code in Visual Studio. Alrighty. So this is the Lambda architecture. It wasn't invented by Microsoft, but typically when it comes to data processing pipelines, it's really popular. I'm sure a lot of you guys here are familiar with the Lambda architecture. So from an Azure IoT perspective, we believe in this a whole lot as well, which is about getting data ingested, and very much once it's ingested, what do you do with that data pipeline? Very simply, it could be split into three different parts. If you just focus on the middle part of this slide, there is a batch layer, which is meant for you to do historical analysis, which is primarily what a lot of people are familiar with. But what's interesting is with the speed layer, which means that you're effectively doing data in motion analytics. An analogy I often like to use is that consider yourself at, since I'm based in Sydney, so I'll use example of the Sydney Harbour Bridge, that you set up a gantry on top of the Sydney Harbour Bridge, and what you want to do is to look at the real-time traffic of cars that's flowing underneath the bridge. Right, on the roads. And that is very much what speed layer is about. And you can see that those are the Azure services which allows you to tap into that real-time data stream really quickly. During the earlier lunch break, I did a quick session about data ingestion made easy. It was primarily to demonstrate that. And I get involved in a lot of IoT projects with customers. And the first thing that we want to demonstrate to customers, and you may think about this within your organization as well, which is to not go to the extreme of tapping into the sensor data, but let's go to target some low-hanging fruits, which is you've got data aggregated in some kind of system. It could be historian. It could be a CSV file, for all you care. Then all you want to do is to demonstrate that you could replay that data really quickly, so much so that it looks as though that the data is streaming real-time into Azure, and you're doing real-time data processing with it. Because there are some really interesting things you can do with it. For example, you can invoke a real-time anomaly detection algorithm, which is just an API call away from Stream Analytics. And with that, you can figure out if there is anomaly, and if there is an anomaly, what do you do with that? And that pretty much links over to the next pillar, which is, you know, how do you present or visualize this, or how do you integrate that with an existing line of business application? And finally, there's a service layer as well. And a lot of my customers particularly like the service layer because this is the layer in which they can monetize that. Because once you've gotten that data, you have achieved some analytics or insights, operational insights out of that, you could expose this as a service layer, as an API, in which you can fully monetize from that, depending on what sort of business model that you're in. But in the simplest case, that means that you could expose that data so that another application can consume that data really quickly. Right? But I'll start off my demonstrations with focusing on what's on the left-hand side, which is typically what gets people excited in an IoT world, or particularly in the IoT maker world, which is you've got a Raspberry Pi, you've got some gadgets, you have a breadboard, you want to start connecting it. So those are the fun stuff, and what can you do with that? There are many different patterns. At the very top layer, if you've got a sensor, a pretty capable sensor or device, you are able to send telemetry directly onto IoT Hub. But it's not a one-way traffic. You could also send command and control notifications to your device. And that's what we call cloud-to-device messages, right? But in cases some devices which do not have the capability of opening up a TCP IP connection over to the cloud, you may need a few gateway to help facilitate that. So that becomes a conduit, which does most likely protocol adaptation. I'll be covering that in my Azure IoT Gateway SDK demo. So let's move on. This is a typical data pipeline, if you will. You have, at the very source, you could have a connected device. Again, if you have a device which can talk to the cloud directly, awesome. But if not, you have that device speaking to a few gateway. It could be an industrial IoT gateway, which is a really fancy term for a mini PC, if you will. A lot of them are actually made by former PC makers, if you will. So you get that device that does a whole bunch of protocol adaptation. Sometimes it's not just because that device doesn't talk to the internet. It's because it speaks a different protocol, like 6LowPAN, Bluetooth Low Energy, or whatnot. So you do need to have a few gateway which bridges the gap between the sensor and the cloud. So once everything lands in IoT Hub, you can do two things. You have a telemetry channel, and you also have a command and control channel. And in Microsoft or in the Azure IoT world, we term that D2C, in other words, device-to-cloud telemetry, or C2D, cloud-to-device notifications or command and control. So once that's in, now typically the easiest way in which you can start processing that near real-time data stream is by using a service in Azure called Stream Analytics. It's a really easy way of piping the input, writing a T-SQL-like type of syntax for filtering, manipulation, aggregation, so on and so forth. It's got a really rich DML, DDL language. And then you would write that to an output. And the output may very well be an Azure Blob Storage for persisting all of your telemetry. Or you could get that connected to some other processes, like perhaps invoking an Azure ML web service for doing real-time scoring. But in cases, and this is real, I've done this with a couple of customers, in which we use Data Factory to orchestrate a full HD Insight cluster, a Spark cluster, that has a Spark ML model running behind that, that will be training based upon the data that we've ingested into that. And once you've done that, you can figure out what you can do with it. You can pump that over to Azure SQL, or maybe you might want to get that connected to Azure Logic Apps. Now, a lot of telemetry, the nature of telemetry are mostly time series data. So you don't necessarily put that directly into Azure SQL database, because a database is not really a good place to store time series data. So you might have a few options. The easiest is blob storage, but you could consider putting that up in Azure Data Lake. You might think about putting that on a time series database based upon OpenTSDB. So you might put that on a Cassandra cluster with the OpenTSDB TSDB connector installed in it as well. All right, so first thing I'll do is that I'll focus on the first pillar, or the first bucket of view, if you will, which is based upon device connectivity and management. And that comes from my first demo. All right. If you can help me switch to, yep, awesome. So here's my IoT hub. My IoT hub is called Osmold. It's running in Australia East right now, and because I've been running some tests before this, you can see that it's working. There's about 1,000 messages I've ingested. I've configured about 142 devices, so on and so forth. But the first thing I want to show is how do you connect device number one? I spent considerable time with customers and partners helping them connect device number one. So let's see how does that take place. I'll jump into Visual Studio. Now, there is an Azure IoT Client SDK, which is fully open source. It's available on GitHub. You can clone that repo onto your local machine. And there are a whole bunch of different programming language bindings to it. There are great samples in there. And where I'm at now, I'm more comfortable running the C# example. So let me just show you what that is. So first thing you need to figure out, what's the device connection string? The device connection string is that per-device authentication token, if you will, that needs to be there before you could initiate a connection to IoT Hub. This is a really nice tool. It's called the Device Explorer. You can tell that a developer wrote this tool. It's not too fancy in the UI department, but it does the trick. Okay. Now, where do you get this tool? I'll show you where it is. If you just go to the GitHub repo, github.com/Azure IoT SDK C#, go to releases, you will see that under the latest release, there's always a Device Explorer MSI. There is also the source code behind it because this project is completely open source. But the easiest way in which you can get this tool is just to run this MSI file, then you get this nice little tool over here. So what I want to do is to create a new device, and let's call this Ignite 2017, and that's it. There are two options. I could use security keys, which is consists of this primary key or secondary key, or I could also choose an X.509 security certificate. So this makes it a whole lot easier for you to, especially if the certificate is provisioned in the device, it's really simple for you to authenticate against that. But what's nice about this is that it allows me control. So if for any reason, if that device has been compromised, based upon an anomaly detection algorithm I have running in the cloud, I could just blacklist this device, and there's no way that this device can send any telemetry onto my Azure IoT Hub service. If I were to just scroll down to look for Ignite 2017, right mouse click on that, I can copy the connection string, which allows me to paste that onto my code here. All right, so that's how it looks like. If you guys have photographic memory, no point trying to. you could try to remember this, but you know I could easily just disable this device later on. I'll send 10 messages. What's really nice about this is that when I create a connection, I can also specify what protocol that I want that connection to be made. So that is done by going to the transport type. So transport type dot, and here are your options. Oops, sorry. Let me just maximize that. Hit dot again. Ah, never mind. I think it's big enough for you to see. So that's AMQP, AMQP over WebSocket. This is for traversal across firewalls, HTTP version 1, MQTT, as well as MQTT over WebSocket. So there are plenty of options for you. There are reasons why you might choose one protocol over the other. The choice is completely up to yours. But in cases where your favorite protocol is not here, it's not listed here, no worries. That is when you would create a field gateway to do that protocol adaptation because perhaps your sensor only speaks CoAP, right? Or it speaks BACnet in case we're trying to integrate with a building management system, but it's really up to you. So in this case, by default, it uses AMQP. What else is here? So the first thing it does is that it will send an event, but at the same time, it would also pause or put a while loop to accept any cloud to device messages. So what I'll do now is I'll save this, compile this, and let's give it a run. All right, at the same time, let me just get back to my Device Explorer. And what I'll do is I'll go to Ignite 2017, monitor. As a matter of fact, let me just restart this. All right, so it's sending 10 messages over to IoT Hub. And all those 10 messages have been received here in this window. The reason why this is possible is because I'm actually using an IoT Hub owner credential to open up a connection, a service connection to IoT Hub. So that allows me to consume messages off IoT Hub. So with this 10 messages here, I'm rest assured that telemetry channel is working. So what I'll do is that I'll try to send a command to the device as well. So if I were to just select my device and say, hello, Ignite 2017, send it across. There you go. that message has been received by IoT Hub. Now, for those of you who have been playing with IoT Hub, you know that, well, there's no magic around this. That's that bi-directional communication between a device and IoT Hub. All right. Just to see a show of hands, how many of you have already started using IoT Hub in the audience? All right, cool. Thanks. So just hit, in fact, Control C, get out there. And let's see, what is my next demo? Ah, device management, all right. So here are a few concepts about device management. It's a new feature in IoT Hub. So if you blink sometime in December last year, all of these features went GA. So first thing first, there's a concept of device twin. And then there are methods, jobs, and queries. So methods are somewhat like cloud to device messages, except they are somewhat different. It still uses that same AMQP or MQTT communication channel. It's just that we've implemented some patterns over that to designate that this is a method or this is a job, right? So with that, we've got some patterns and libraries in which you can find it all in Azure Docs. This is a nice diagram to explain how it all works. The device twin is a logical representation of the device in IoT Hub itself. So there is two things within the device twin. There is the concept of what are the reported properties of that device. So meaning that the device, the physical device, always know what is its reported properties. But at the same time, from a cloud perspective, you could also affect change or modify the properties in that device twin. And that pretty much goes into the desired state in the desired properties. So let's say if I want to change the interval in which telemetry is sent over to the cloud, I would create a service in the cloud, talk to IoT Hub and say that I want to change the desired property of this device and change interval to from like say 3,000 milliseconds to 500 milliseconds. The device would synchronize this with IoT Hub at some point. The interval is, I can't remember, I think it was like every 5 minutes. And once it gets that desired property, it would change its internal state, if you will, or the behavior of that device. And once it's done that, it will send a JSON back to IoT Hub saying that, all right, now my reported properties is what you have instructed me to change in the first place. Okay? So that's device twin, and with that, you could also invoke direct methods. I'll be showing you a really neat demo for that. And all of this pretty much works on that on the same channel. Just in case if you want to go down to what lies under the hood. But just take it that there is a D2C communication channel and there's a C2D communication channel as well. This is the really nice part about jobs and queries. So let's say you are managing 100,000 devices and you want to affect or you want to modify the behavior of this 100,000 devices. And one of that behavior could be you want to force a reboot. So that reboot would be pretty much like a job, or it could be a firmware update job. Maybe a firmware update is a more suitable example there. What you would do is that you would define that job, all right, and you would set the target on your set of devices. And your devices could be queried based upon tags. It's like a hashtag. So let's say if you've tagged all your devices as Queensland, being the region. So once you say apply firmware update job on all devices which has been tagged Queensland, what IoT Hub would do is that it would spin up all these child jobs, if you will, and would make sure that those jobs would execute on all those devices which have been tagged Queensland. Same thing goes with queries. It's based upon a T-SQL-like type of syntax, which allows you to create business logic and whatnot. Now, this is a really nice feature. Oftentimes, when I sit in with my customers and partners, and we talk about solution architecture, when I touch upon device management, like that is that light bulb moment in the room, because you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Device management features pretty much comes out of the box. And there are Azure IoT Client SDKs, which allows you to tap into all those features without you having to write your own code for it. All right, let's take a quick demo. Back to my demo machine. So for that, I'll be using my Raspberry Pi to demonstrate how device management works. Just to show you that my Raspberry Pi 3 is indeed running, so you can see lights blinking there. This is my Texas Instruments SensorTech. This is the next part of my demo. But first thing first is that I want to connect a client to IoT Hub, and this client happens to be running on my Raspberry Pi as a C application. So this is the interface for my Raspberry Pi. If I could just go into the right folder. All right. So let's run the C build, and it's called IoT Hub SDK, serializer, sample, device, twin, config update, device, twin, config update. The beauty of this is that this same sample is available in the GitHub repo, so you can absolutely try this out. So what I've done here is that I've run that client application. Just consider this to be a real sensor running or connected to my Raspberry Pi that is actually reporting telemetry such as humidity and temperature to IoT Hub at a specified interval. And it's using MQTT protocol. You can see that a whole bunch of quality of service information over there. It's based upon QoS level 1, I believe. We only support up to QoS level 1, and it's being sent across to IoT Hub. And this device is called, let me just cancel this, it's not called Ignite 2017, but it's called SensorTech 01. Let me clear this. If I were to monitor that telemetry channel in IoT Hub, you can see that the data is coming through. Right, it's just random value. There's no real sensor attached to it right now, but it's just creating a whole bunch of random values for humidity and temperature. But I can be rest assured that the data is actually coming true. All right, now let's go back to the management tab, and I'll scroll back down to where I can find SensorTech 01. I can say show device properties, and in here you can see the device twin. The device twin is all expressed in JSON syntax. It's very simple. I've got desired properties. The send frequency is every 5 seconds. The last updated time was this. So let's imagine if you're building a dashboard, you could absolutely use the query language in device management to query IoT Hub to return all this information to you. And you can present this in a really nice dashboard if you like. But what I want to do now is to make a change on this device. I want to change the frequency, the interval frequency, from 5,000 milliseconds to just about 500 milliseconds. So to do that, I'll go to the desired property tab, and I will change the telemetry config from 5,000 to 500. Okay, so hang on. Telemetry config. Make sure I have the close bracket. Desired. Yeah. Don't even need that. All right. So let's send it across. And boom. You can see that my device has just woken up to that command, if you will. Right, so now it's sending at a much faster frequency. And if you take a look at the reported properties, if I were to do a refresh, so right now it still says 5,000, but obviously if I do a refresh, you will see that it is 500. Okay. Now, what if the device is not alive? That's pretty simple to simulate. All I have to do is just kill this process. And this time around, I'll change this to something that's more manageable. Like 3 seconds, every 3 seconds, send that across. All right. So that that desired property change has gone to IoT Hub, IoT Hub is trying to deliver this to the device, but it knows that the device is not online, right? So the next time the device comes online, it would attempt to do that. Right now, if you see my desired properties is 3,000 milliseconds, but a reported property remains at 500 milliseconds. If I were to run this again, okay, you can see that in a moment's time, if I do a refresh, it's now at 3,000 milliseconds. So the device, when it wakes up, so as long as you use the Azure IoT Client SDK, it will always synchronize the device twin, its device twin with IoT Hub. And it comes for free. You don't have to do anything extra. You don't have to tell your device to synchronize properties. It will just do that automatically. So that's why I say that device management is a really nice feature within IoT Hub. A lot of people just love using that. What else can I do? I can do direct methods on that device as well. Okay, so what I'll try to do is to use a pattern as part of device management. I would do a reboot on my Raspberry Pi. And in order to do that, I can't just run it. I need administrative rights for that. So I'll just do sudo, okay, run this again, and get back to my device explorer. And this time around, I'll say I'll call a method on my device, choose SensorTech 01, and I'll just say reboot, okay? Now, keep a close eye on my console here, my shell console. If I call method, you can see that, there you go. That's it. Hang on, there should be a message that says that reboot has been accepted. Let's see. You guys see reboot, reported state, accepted. You guys saw that, right? I must be blind. I couldn't see it. Oh, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Right. Reboot. So my window here, my Raspberry Pi, is rebooting now. Right. So you can do a whole bunch of things. Now, out of the box, I think we've defined five different patterns. Like there's a firmware upgrade. There is a reboot. There is, I can't remember fully what are all the patterns, but there are about five patterns which we have published. But it doesn't stop you from creating your own direct method, right? Because we don't dictate how that happens. The code still needs to be written by you, because within this code, there is a placeholder, a callback function, if you will, within the C code that actually reboots my Raspberry Pi, right? So if you say, well, nuclear reactor is going through a meltdown, you want to shut it down, we don't decide that for you. You have to write your own code to deal with that nuclear reactor meltdown, okay? So that's what it is. All right, let's jump back to my slides. Okay, I'm going to switch gear. I'm still talking about device connectivity, things on the edge, but now I'm going to switch gear and talk about the IoT gateway. A few things about the gateway is that, again, open source is available on GitHub. What you see here on the right-hand side is a commercial gateway kit. It's sold by Grove. I'm not really advertising for them there, but what's really nice out of this is that if you are an IoT maker and you're prototyping your devices, there you go. Instead of using a Raspberry Pi, there is a commercial gateway kit that you can buy. It's fully compatible with Azure IoT Gateway SDK. It's supported by Intel as well, and you can try a whole bunch of different scenarios on that. Now, the Azure Gateway IoT Gateway SDK is all standard-based, written in C, but it's not restricted to that. I have a partner who told me that they can't find C developers easily these days, right? So that question to me is, hey, Fi, can I write my gateway modules in .NET or in Java? The answer is yes. You can absolutely run modules, gateway modules in .NET, Java, and pretty soon we'll be supporting .NET Core as well. So that means everything runs natively, even if your gateway is running Linux. So completely cross-platform. As a matter of fact, a lot of gateways actually run on some flavor of Linux, like Yocto Linux or Wind River Linux, and we absolutely support those scenarios as well. Okay, some gateway concepts. So I've spoken about modules. And you can chain these modules up quite nicely in a JSON file in order for you to create that on-premise end-to-end scenario. There's a really nice thing of having a local message broker. So how it is that, like, consider this particular scenario here. You're trying to connect a legacy device. The legacy device doesn't talk to the cloud directly, so it talks to your gateway on-premises. And the first module that you might have is a protocol A ingestion or translation module. It understands how to translate, say, a CoAP protocol. And what you want to do is to tap into that telemetry stream from that sensor. So once you've gotten that, then what you do is that you pipe that through to a different module, which is the IoT Hub Client module. And the IoT Hub Client module has all the intelligence of connecting to IoT Hub, not just in sending telemetry to IoT Hub, but it's also capable of receiving notifications in a cloud-to-device type of fashion. So this is a sample architecture. So as you can see here, you can chain up a bunch of modules quite nicely. Now, I call this protocol X ingestion, but it may well be a BACnet protocol adapter, an OPC UA adapter for industry 4.0 type of scenario. You might have a local filtering module because you don't want to make Microsoft rich. You don't want to send all telemetry to our cloud. You want to filter the telemetry. You can absolutely do that on the edge now using a custom module sitting on a gateway. Identity mapping is for, like, for instance, how do you ensure that a device, a sensor that's connecting to your gateway, is mapped to a device ID in IoT Hub? So in this case, as a matter of fact, I'll be demonstrating that later. I'm doing a mapping between the MAC address of my TI sensor tag, which speaks Bluetooth low energy, and then mapping that to a device ID in IoT Hub. And then you can have logger modules, IoT Hub will send that data across, again, handling that bidirectional communication with IoT Hub. There are other modules which a lot of my partners have been thinking about developing by themselves, including writing some kind of caching module, right? Because you can't take for granted that the gateway is connected to the internet at all times. So what happens if it's occasionally disconnected from the internet? So you might want to have a store and forward module. You might want to think about creating a compression module as well, especially if the data is really chunky and huge and text-based, and you might want to think about having a gzip compression module. Now, this is the architecture of my demo, which I'll be showing you in a bit. So I've got my Texas Instruments sensor tag, which speaks BLE, or Bluetooth Smart, I think that's what it's called these days. And it will send temperature data across to my Raspberry Pi, which acts as my field gateway. So within my Raspberry Pi, there is an existing BLE module. This comes for free. You don't have to write that at all. It's the sample module available in there. And then I'm doing identity mapping between the MAC address of my sensor tag to a device ID, which I pre-created in IoT Hub. And I also have a BLE printer to print out the readings from my sensor tag on my console window. And IoT Hub module is responsible for sending that across to IoT Hub. But not only that, it's able to receive notifications from IoT Hub later on, which is this pattern over here. Receive commands from IoT Hub, in which then it chains those modules back in the likewise fashion. Okay, let's go back to my demo machine, please. And to show you... Oh, let me just SSH back into my Raspberry Pi. Oops. Oh, what happened there? Ah, caps is on. Alrighty. Azure IoT Gateway SDK. And all the sample is available in here. So if I were to go to samples, BLE Gateway, source, nano gateway JSON. Now, this is the JSON file which describes the architecture that I've presented to you in the previous slide. First, you define the modules. I've got an IoT Hub module, and it shows that it's actually invoking this library over here. It's really pre-compiled. And this is the IoT Hub that is connecting to it. I can also specify what's the transport, this BLE printer. This is the mapping module, in which I'm saying that a MAC address of this string, please map that to this device ID in my IoT Hub. And these are the device key. So you can consider the mapping module to be impersonating this device, if you will, right, on behalf of my sensor tag. What else? This is the BLE cloud to the device, in which I have another module for that. There is a sensor tag, and these are all the get characteristics ID. So if you have a Bluetooth scanner, you can absolutely figure out, you know, what are all the instructions of your Bluetooth device. It just happens that this is all pre-done there. And where those modules are being linked is all defined at the bottom here. So what he's saying is that for everything, please send it over to the logger module, because I want everything to be logged onto that text file. The source pretty much starts from a sensor tag. The sensor tag is emitting the telemetry, sending the telemetry over to my gateway, right? And the first thing I'll do is that I'll send it over to the mapping module. The mapping module would then send it over to IoT Hub, as you can see here, mapping module to IoT Hub. And subsequently, for cloud to device messages, it's also sending from IoT Hub back to the mapping module, so on and so forth. If I were to scroll down, it pretty much just defines that whole chain of events or modules of how they're being interlinked. And our plans from engineering is to have a GUI to help you design this at some point. But right now, you would have to kind of use a sample template. It's all in JSON, and write it out yourself. Okay, so let's get out of here. And what I'll do is I'll run Bluetooth CTL, my controller. And just to show you that this is running, at the same time, I'll also bring out my camera. Okay, alrighty. So let's try to connect my sensor tag, which is this MAC address here. So it's not quite connected until I click on the switch on button and shows that connection is successful. But let me just disconnect from this device, because I need to use that from within my gateway. Let's quit. Let's get out of here. Now, what I'll do now is I'll run my gateway. It is as simple as just running build samples BLE gateway, And I need to fit a parameter to it. And the argument is my JSON file that happens to be sitting in samples BLE gateway source gateway sample.json. All right. So when I hit that, you can see that the first thing it does is that it pulls a whole bunch of information. So you could populate all of this information into the device twin, so that IoT Hub has a logical representation of your device. And this is real, okay? This is real sensor values coming from my device. The first one is actually the IR temperature. So you can see that because I'm covering that with my palm, it's pretty much getting my skin temperature, right? And the next one to it is the other value is the ambient temperature, which is about 24 degrees in this room right now. Okay, you can see that this is real telemetry that's being streamed across to IoT Hub. There's no need for me to show you Device Explorer, because you've seen that before, right? I could also read or consume those events of IoT Hub, but you get the idea. What I want to do now is that I want to do some nice things, like can I send commands to my sensor tag? So this is where it's interesting, right? From the cloud, I issue a command, goes to IoT Hub. IoT Hub is responsible for sending that direct method onto my field gateway, and my field gateway would communicate with the device using the respective module. So what I'll do is I'll bring device explorer out again, and I'll go to the messages to device. So this time around, it's not a direct method. It's just a C to D device. Sorry, a C to D message, cloud to device message. And I have my cheat sheet because I obviously can't remember all of that, all of those commands. So what I want to do is I want to reset all LEDs and buzzer. Okay. Send it across. And you can see in a while that instruction should have been received on my Raspberry Pi gateway. Did I miss that? Yeah, it did come up. All right, so next thing, what I want to do is that I want to tell my SensorTech that it should start accepting remote commands. And this is the JSON for it. Specifically, I'm invoking that get characteristic UUID. So let me do that again. Send. It's running a little bit slower than when I was trying this out earlier. All right, fingers crossed. Now, what I want to do is turn on the green LED. And I really hope those other instructions have been received by... Oh, right. My bad. SensorTech. Did someone tell me that earlier, which I missed? Okay, let me do this again. All right, the reason why is because I was setting it to the wrong device. So it should be SensorTech 1, clear. Send. All right, yeah, so you can see that it's scheduled a new instruction. Okay. And then I'll configure IO as remote. Do another instruction call. Okay. That's been received as well. And now, for the finale, I'm going to turn on the green LED and let me bring my camera back up. So wait for it. So let's bring this to this side over here. And send. Voila! The green LED came on. Right? It's just a bit geeky, but I got so excited when I saw that, like, woo! You could also, like, turn on the buzzer, so on and so forth. But I'm not going to turn on. I don't want to drain that small little coin cell battery in my SensorTech. So what I'll do is I'll reset all LED and buzzer. So let's turn that off. There you go. It's turned off. So it's a pretty easy way for you to do command and control. And all that is done is thanks to my Fuse gateway, which is running on my Raspberry Pi, that is communicating with my SensorTech via BLE. Right? And you could think of many different scenarios. Let's assume that you have a sensor that actually speaks 6LowPAN. Right? It speaks a different type of protocol. And you could absolutely just build your own module and bridge that with IoT Hub using the Gateway SDK, right? And it's just going to get easier to write modules within the Gateway SDK. All right, let's get back to my slide deck, please. So let's switch gear. This time around, let's move away from the edge. So we'll be talking about the speed layer. The speed layer, if you recall earlier, as part of the Lambda architecture, is about doing near real-time data processing, right? I'll start off with introducing a really nice feature called IoT Hub Message Routing. So how this works is that you can define a whole bunch of endpoints, different endpoints in IoT Hub. The endpoints right now, they are Service Bus and Event Hub. Okay, so what this is about is saying that if the message that comes in, if it has a message property that satisfies your query condition, please do route that over to that endpoint. Okay, So like I said, this is a really nice way for you to do back-end processing. You can create your own custom endpoints for service bus queues, topics, and event hubs. I'll be demonstrating how you would do that within the Azure portal, but you could also write your own ARM templates to make effect that change. It's the same query language as what you would use in Device Twin, so it's all SQL-like. All right, back to my demo machine, please. Okay, well, I don't need my camera anymore, at least I don't think so. Okay, at the same time, let me just get out of here. IoT Hub. Here we go. Now, first, before that, so let me demonstrate what I want to do here. So I want to create an endpoint, which is an event hub. Why is because I want to archive certain telemetry which has been ingested through IoT Hub, right? So if a device or a sensor says that the message type is archive, then what I want to do is to set up a route that points all of that telemetry or routes all of that telemetry over to my event hub. My event hub has a new feature called archive that writes that to Azure Blob Storage. Okay, so in the interest of time, I'm not going to create the event hub, but I have an event hub that's already created over here. I believe it's called Osmode Archive. So if I click on Osmode Archive, I'll just show you where that configuration lives. I believe it's under Properties. Oh no, event hubs, I've got an archive hub. So earlier that was just a namespace declaration. What lies under the hood is this. So if I were to look at my properties, there you go. You will see that I've turned on my archival function over here. And what it will do is that depending on how many partitions I've created my event hub, each one of those partitions will have a dedicated path to my Azure blob container, which has all that telemetry written into a JSON file, right? And that is the interval, time window, every 5 minutes or up to 300 meg. If it exceeds that, it'll create a new file. So that's what I'll do. But in order to create this route, so what I'll do is I'll go back to my IoT hub, and under endpoints, so first I create my endpoint. Let's add a new endpoint. So the endpoint is called Archive Hub, and it's an event hub pointing to Osmode Archive. And the event hub name is Archive Hub. That's it. So that's my endpoint. Right, and you can define up to 10 endpoints, if I believe. You can check this out in Azure Docs. I believe, yeah, it's 10 endpoints, and you can create 100 different routing rules for it. Okay. So let that save onto IoT Hub. All right, done. Yeah, it says you may have up to 10 endpoints. Go over to my route, create a new route that says, and this is my archive route, data source being from device messages. So all device messages, please, if it satisfies this condition, please pass that over to Archive Hub. And the query string is if message type equals to archive. That's it. Right? Save. That's it. So where do I set message properties? Now, another thing to take note here is that we are only setting the condition based upon message properties. We can't take a peek into your message payload. So be rest assured that IoT Hub will never ever inspect your message payload. So you can't say that IoT Hub, please take a look at telemetry data that, you know, temperature equals to 37 degrees and please route that through. We can't do that because that's an invasion of your privacy, right? Kind of, right? Because that means we're looking into your data, but we don't do that. So as such, we can only create conditions based upon message properties. And I'll show you how to create message properties. So what I'll do is I'll go back to my AMQP client over here. All right. So let's go to the part that sends events. Now, I don't need all of this anymore. Hang on. Send event. Yep. There you go. So what you do is that in your event message, as part of the properties back, you can create a whole bunch of key value pairs to that. So what I'm saying is that region New South Wales, and I'm specifically setting up the message type as archive here, okay? And I'm sending that across to IoT Hub. But instead of just sending 10 messages, so let's increase that. Let's send like 1,000 messages, all right? Rebuild. Now, at the same time, so this is sending to... I should use my sensor tag. If I were to go back to my management tab, sensor tag, connection string. Save that. And at the same time, let's go back to my Raspberry Pi just to show you. Alright, so let's run that. So this is sending a whole bunch of telemetry across, except that this one doesn't have any message property set, but this client does, right? So I'll start this, and you can see that it's firing through all those messages, okay? And if I go back to my Device Explorer, and this time around, if I take a look at what's being received, I'm only receiving those which are coming from my Raspberry Pi, right? Because it doesn't have a message property set. Now, all of those which have been set would now be archived to Event Hub. Now, a really easy way for me to check that is by running my Storage Explorer. And if I were to select the account, the storage account for that, now all of that actually goes to Telemetry Archive. You can see that a file would have been written. Last modify. This is all based on UTC time, so you can see that Osmode Archive has just written a file over here, right, at about this time, a couple minutes ago. So all of the telemetry which is coming through from this has now been evaluated through that message IoT Hub message route. It gets instead of putting into that typical endpoint in which my consumer would pull messages out of that, it actually send that telemetry over to Event Hub, and Event Hub in turn archive that onto Azure Storage. So this is a really nice way in which you can, instead of pulling messages from IoT Hub, you can now push messages based upon a condition to an endpoint. So that's what it does. Alrighty, so let me just quit my Raspberry Pi app. Oh, done. Okay. If you could just bring me back to my slide deck, thank you. All right. Stream analytics. Now, stream analytics is used in the Azure IoT suite. And what you see here is the remote monitoring pre-configured solution. All right, so the reference architecture is such that events which have been ingested in IoT Hub can be processed by Stream Analytics, But what I'll be demonstrating is something slightly different. If you want to know more about remote monitoring, there is a session by my Kiwi colleague. The session is happening tomorrow morning. It's by Vishesh. So if you want to find out more about that, do go to his session. What I'll be demonstrating is more about creating a stream analytics job and setting it the output to Power BI in a new feature called streaming dataset. But I also like to point out a really nice feature within stream analytics, which is we now support geospatial data and queries. So that means if you're ingesting GPS coordinates, you can very easily use GeoJSON to do queries. Like, these are some of the samples, sample queries that you can do. For instance, creating a geofence. And how you would do that is by creating a polygon so that, now let's assume that this is a connected car scenario. If the car enters that geofence, and how you know that is because you have a fuel gateway sitting in your car, which is connected to your OBD2 dongle. At the same time, perhaps it's got a GPS data logger to it, or may well be an app within your mobile phone. So once you ingest that telemetry, we can say that if it enters within this polygon, then please send an output to an event hub, right? And you have another process listening to that, and that whole chain of workflow can continue after that. What else? What was really nice? Create an event when a storm is heading my way, so on and so forth. I won't go into details. The slide is there. So if you want to try out those queries, it's all available there. It's really nice. So you don't necessarily have to take all of that telemetry, put it into DocumentDB. DocumentDB has geospatial support as well, but the difference is that this is real time. So as when the data is coming through, you can do geospatial query against it. All right, back to my demo machine, please. So what I'll do now is that same thing, telemetry comes through, and I'll create a new stream analytics job. So let's call this Ignite 2017 ASA, all right? I'll use my same resource group, Osmote. Okay, and click Create. It's pretty simple to pipe the input from the IoT Hub, run a query against that, and then send the output to Power BI. Now, we've always had this function, and what's new is that we now support streaming data sets. So in other words, you have better intervals in which the telemetry could be visualized on a Power BI dashboard. Where is that? Refresh. There you go, Ignite 2017 ASA. All right. I'll specify an input. No surprises there. This would be my existing IoT Hub. So let's just call this IoT Hub. You can call this anything you want. And the source is an IoT Hub. Use the same one from my subscriptions called Osmote. Messaging. Okay, I can just use the IoT Hub owner and create. Okay. Edit input. Okay. Now, next thing I want to add an output to Power BI. Again, not being picky, I'll just call this Power BI. And there's a bunch of syncs available here. I'll just choose Power BI. Okay. And this is where you need to have your Azure account to be on the same Active Directory tenant as your Power BI subscription. Oh wow. Oops, I think I must have Let's authorize again. I get nervous every time I enter my PIN. Never mind. Just like any good cook, I've actually done, because I think I've entered a wrong PIN, it thinks I'm a bogus user. What I'll do is that I'll show you one in which I've created before this, where it's the same thing, and it's called Osmode Streaming Data. Okay, same thing, I've got an input of IoT Hub, output as Power BI, and the query is really simple. Select star from IoT Hub, or select star into Power BI from IoT Hub. Okay, and if I were to go to my Power BI, this is something new. If you scroll down, all the way down in your workspace, you will see a new feature called Streaming Datasets. And my Streaming Dataset is called Device Streaming Analytics. With that, I can create a dashboard, but I've already created a dashboard prior to this. It's nothing too fancy looking, but I do have to run my Raspberry Pi. Okay, let's run this again. A whole bunch of dashboards here, but I only want to see those which have been created by myself. So it's called Device Streaming Data. So in a while, you will see that this is updated and this is real time. It's really simple for you to create a nice, rich visual dashboard that allows you to have real streaming data coming through from IoT Hub, you know, have an aggregator or a filtering job in ASA that ultimately pipes that over to Power BI. Right? And this, you don't just have to run this here. You can also use Power BI embedded to have that sitting within your own dashboard, and your custom dashboard if you like. All right, so that's that. Let's see, what's the next thing? Back to my slide deck, please. We have 13 minutes left. All right. Now, what other options do you have as part of that Lambda architecture in the speed layer? If you think that you have pretty much exceeded what you could do in stream analytics, you really need to write some heavy lifting code. You could use Event Hub's processor. The Event Hub's processor is not new, but it's just that previously it lives under the service bus namespace. But now there is a new namespace as of the 2nd of February. We now have a new NuGet package, a new library for it. And it's a really nice Event Hub processor. I'll show you how to write a simple event processor that consumes all of those events from IoT Hub. If you were to switch back to my demo machine, I'll show you how that looks like. So let me just do this really quickly. Stop this. Run through a few quick steps of how you could do that. So let's call this Ignite Stream Processor. Okay. And it's just a console app. All right, first thing first, get the NuGet package. And it's called Microsoft Azure.event. It's the second one, Event Hub's processor. So just install that onto your project. Sort of figure out the dependencies. Eventually, it will actually pull out the Event Hub's namespace or that NuGet as well. Okay, internet is running a little bit slow, or maybe really crawling. That happens sometime. All right, first thing first is that I'll create a new class, and this is a class that's dedicated to creating that connection to IoT Hub. So let's just call this my sensor. Oh, okay. So while the NuGet package is doing its thing, I'll call this the sensor tag events processor. Make sure you've got the right namespace. So it's Microsoft.azure.eventhubs and eventhubs.processor. Okay, so I've got my SensorTech events. I can type really fast here. I've got my cheat code snippet all lined up. So what it does here is that I've got my class is of this type, iEventProcessor. Okay. That's weird. Save. I think at some point it will resolve that. So what it does here is that, it just implement according to the interface, a couple of things like how do you open a synchronous connection to IoT Hub, close a sync, how do you process errors, so on and so forth. Okay. Let me just compile this and make sure that everything's all good. That's weird. Oh. If only I can. All right, let's get rid of that. There we go. Not too sure why it doesn't resolve this. That's weird. Alright, I'm not going to do debugging. I think I must have missed up a step. Let me just pull out a project which I've created prior to this. There we go. All right. All of the implementation over here, open a sync, process that, and within the main program. So IoT Hub also has an Event Hub compatible endpoint. So that's how the Event Hub or the Event Processor host could actually be reused on an IoT Hub, because it's on the right-hand side of IoT Hub, that's typically what I say, that endpoint is fully compatible with Event Hub, right? So I've got that here, but you do need to pass in a shared access key to it, and where you get this is from your IoT Hub shared access keys. So by default, when you create an IoT Hub, you have IoT Hub owner as well as service. So you might not want to use IoT Hub owner in this particular case, so you use the service key and a shared access key for that. Put in the entity path, which is the name of your IoT Hub. As for the storage container, the reason why we need parameters for your Azure storage container is because the Event Hub processor host needs to store partition leases information as well as checkpoint information into, it has to put that somewhere, right? And the implementation, one of the implementations is actually to store all of that information into an Azure storage. Okay, so you can see here that when it first wakes up, passes the Event Hub entity path, the default consumer group name, as well as where it will store the partition leases and checkpointing information, register the Event Processor host, and my main method is just about calling that. That's it. All right. So let me just run this. So when it first runs, it will talk to the Event Hub compatible endpoint of IoT Hub, and it happens that I have got just about three partitions, and it will pull all of that telemetry off the IoT Hub. Okay. Now, there are a whole bunch of stuff here because since the start of my session, I've been sending a lot of telemetry messages over to IoT Hub. So based upon the last checkpoint that I did, which was just right before this session, so we knew that there are a whole bunch of messages which has been ingested since then. So that is that. So within your code, you can write stuff. You can run your own transformation of the messages, and this is typically done in cases where writing SQL-like syntax just wouldn't cut it for you. But then again, stream analytics is becoming more and more powerful. You can write user-defined functions in JavaScript. So within your job, you are not just confined to writing T-SQL type of syntax. You can call an Azure function You can call a user-defined function in JavaScript, which has a whole lot more logic to it. But for everything else, if you want a highly scalable event processor host, and you're a developer, you're much more comfortable in writing your transformation in an application, this is the framework for you. And where you would put that, obviously, is not in a console app. You would deploy this as a worker role. You could also put this in an Azure web job so that you could automatically scale this if you want to. And how you would scale that, there are some really good articles on Azure Docs that tells you how you could. It's mostly based upon your CPU utilization, which helps you decide when you would automatically scale out the worker roles, if you will. Yeah. Alrighty. Okay. What else? Let's go back to my slide deck, please. So I've done that. I'm almost at the end. So for everything else about IoT Hub, I've created a really nice URL here. It's called Ignite.au IoT Hub. This will bring you over to the IoT Hub learning path. So within that is a really nice flow chart. I'm sure you come from different background. You might be looking at different aspects of your IoT project, but this link here pretty much covers everything end to end. But for everything else, perhaps read more blogs that actually teaches you a lot more about what you can do within an Azure IoT scenario. All right, I still have some time, 4 minutes for a quick Q&A. Is there any question from the audience? Yes, no? Happy customers? So just to let you know, right, there's a question there, yes? Yep. Yep. Right. Okay. So the question was about brownfield devices which already exist, and you want to point them over to a REST endpoint because you can set alarms or whatnot. Yeah, that's absolutely possible. So what you will do in this particular case is that you will write a device provisioning engine, if you will, or application. Let's not call it an engine, just an app, right? Which is very similar to the Device Explorer. So look at the source code behind Device Explorer. That's typically what I advise my customers to do. Because within that, you can figure out how to import your existing devices, how do you create all these devices in bulk, and you can absolutely do that. So let's say if you've got 10,000 devices, you can create a bulk registration of those devices. So once those devices have been registered, the biggest challenge is how do you now instruct those devices to use that device authentication key to authenticate with IoT Hub. So for those cases, the easiest way is like using an Azure IoT Gateway SDK, in which, very similar to my demo, you can see in that mapping module, it will map against your brownfield devices. So you decide what is that authentication that you would accept in that mapping module. And you will map that against the identity in which you have bulk registered in the first place. So that's how you would do that. Yeah. Yes, another question over there. Yep. Security? All right, yeah, so the question is about security architectures. Good question. If you go to the Azure Docs, there's more than I can actually cover now, but there are specific security architecture guidance, how do you build security from the ground up. But what I find really interesting in any IoT scenarios is really understanding or performing proper threat modeling, right? Because there's so many different aspects of IoT. When just looking at that initial diagram, right, the Lambda architecture, there's so many different areas or surface for attack, right? So first thing is to run proper threat modeling, and we have a threat modeling tool for that. So for instance, the threat modeling might tell you that the vulnerabilities on your devices is this, right? And on your IoT Hub service is that, and then you may decide how you want to deal with that. Right, so it's overarching. And once you've done that for enterprise type of scenarios, you might also consider enlisting the help of a third-party security auditor to kind of take a look at your architecture to see that from an independent view that you've done the right things. We also have a security auditor program in which a whole bunch of security auditors are now part of this program that are non-affiliated to Microsoft. They can take a look at your architecture and tell you what more to look at. Yeah. So just go to Azure Docs under IoT Hub. There is a security section to that. Yep. So I've got 22 seconds. I don't think I can take any more questions, but just to let you know, happy creating devices. If you're an IoT maker, I'm sure you'll have a really good, have great fun creating your own devices, and give IoT Hub a try. Yeah. All right. Thanks very much for your time.